Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time, we're going to be cracking open the Synoptic Gospels. Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
Yeah.
Those New Testament books that tell the story of Jesus. They have a lot in common, but they've also each got their own unique flavor. So we're going to try to dig into who wrote these books, when they were written, and what makes each one special. And to help us out, we've got Dr. Robert C. Newman. He's a Synoptic Gospels expert, so we're in good hands. And get this. One of the Gospels might have been written in Hebrew or Aramaic first.
Yeah, it's like having multiple witnesses to a historical event. You know, each Gospel gives us a different angle on things.
Okay, yeah. So let's unpack this a little bit. First things first. Who actually wrote these Gospels? Let's start with Matthew. Tradition says he was a tax collector who became one of Jesus' apostles. But here's where it gets interesting. Early church fathers were already talking about this centuries ago, saying that Matthew wrote his Gospel first and maybe even in Hebrew or Aramaic.
Right. A few early Christian writers mention this, too. Papias, for example, mentions Matthew writing the oracles, divine revelations, not fortune cookies, in a Hebrew dialect.
Wow. Okay, so a Hebrew or Aramaic gospel? Talk about a historical treasure.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, why do we only have a Greek version now?
Well, that's a good question. Dr. Newman suggests that Matthew might have actually written his gospel twice. First in Hebrew or Aramaic, and then later he translated it into Greek, for a wider audience.
Hold on. So you're saying Matthew wrote the same gospel twice?
It's possible.
Well, it's pretty unusual, isn't it?
It might seem that way, but it would explain why Matthew's gospel was, for a while, the only written account of Jesus circulating in the early church.
Okay, I'll take it. So let's move on to Mark. Tradition says he was basically Peter's note taker, like writing down Peter's eyewitness account of Jesus' life.
Yeah. And Papias, that early Christian writer we mentioned, claimed that Mark wrote down Peter's teachings accurately, though not always in chronological order. What's fascinating here is that Mark's writing style might reflect Peter's personality. Mark's gospel is full of vivid details and action, and it's almost like you're right there with them.
So it's like we have a front row seat to history.
Yeah.
Except the timeline's a bit jumbled.
Exactly. Exactly. And there might even be a hidden cameo by Mark himself in the story.
Oh.
Yeah. In the scene where a young man runs away during Jesus' arrest, some scholars think that might be Mark sneaking himself into the narrative.
So basically, Mark might have snuck himself into the story like a biblical Stan Lee cameo.
You could say that.
All right. So let's talk about Luke. Tradition says he was a doctor who traveled with Paul. Talk about an adventurous life.
Yeah.
And get this. His medical background might actually show up in his writing.
Yes. Dr. Newman notes that Luke uses some pretty specific medical terms in his gospel, which is fascinating.
Now, that raises a really interesting question. If Luke traveled with Paul, wouldn't he have had access to all sorts of firsthand information about Jesus? Did he incorporate any of that into his gospel?
That's a great question, and it's something scholars have debated for centuries. Some believe he might have woven in some of those firsthand accounts, while others think he focused more on the stories and teachings that were already circulating in the early church.
Okay, so we've got Matthew, the tax collector turned apostle, Mark, Peter's note taker, and Luke, the doctor turned traveler. And here's what's really interesting. Even with these very different backgrounds, for each gospel, there's no record of anyone else ever claiming to be the author. Early Christian writings, like the Muratorian Canon, basically an ancient bestseller list for early Christian writings, clearly identify these three as the authors.
That's a really important point. The consistency of these attributions across different sources and time periods lends a lot of weight to the traditional authorship.
Okay, so we've got a good grasp on who wrote these Gospels, but when were they actually written? This is where we really start digging for clues. Let's start with Matthew again. Were there any clues within the text itself that hint at when it might have been written?
There are a few interesting tidbits. Matthew uses phrases like, to this day, which implies some time had passed since the events of Jesus' life took place.
Ah, like those vintage clothes you find in your closet that were totally in style back in the day.
Exactly.
But those references don't give us any specific dates, do they? What about external sources? Did early Christian writers have anything to say about when Matthew was written?
Yes. Irenaeus mentioned that Matthew wrote while Peter and Paul were preaching in Rome, which would place the writing sometime between 61 to 68 AD.
Okay, so that gives us a possible time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But hold on, some scholars think Matthew was written after 70 AD, the year Jerusalem was destroyed. They think Matthew's gospel reflects that event. But couldn't Matthew have written about it beforehand? You know, like a prophecy?
Exactly. Dr. Newman points out that if Jesus could predict the future, then Matthew's gospel could have been written before 70 AD. He even suggests that Matthew might have written his gospel even earlier, maybe in the 40s or 50s, in Hebrew or Aramaic, before leaving Jerusalem, and then later produced a Greek version in the 60s.
So, you see, early church fathers already confirmed Matthew's authorship and even hinted at a Hebrew version centuries ago.
It really makes you think about how these texts have been preserved and passed down through generations, doesn't it? It's like holding a piece of history in your hands.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to Mark. When do scholars think Peter's scribe might have put pen to papyrus?
Well, there's no clear-cut evidence that gives us a specific date, but we do have this thing called the concordant dating scheme, which is like a giant puzzle where scholars try to fit all the historical clues together without any pieces contradicting each other.
So how does that apply to Mark?
Well, Clement of Alexandria claimed that Mark wrote after Peter's death, but this scheme tries to fit everything together without creating any contradictions. So if we take Clement's claim that Mark wrote while Peter was still alive, and we interpret Irenaeus's comment about Peter's departure as referring to leaving Rome rather than dying, then we can place Mark's gospel sometime between Paul's arrival in Rome around 61 to 63 AD and the end of Nero's persecution in 68 AD.
Okay, so we've got Matthew potentially in the 40s to 60s, a Mark likely in the 60s. Where does Luke fit into all of this?
Well, Luke's gospel is closely linked to the book of Acts, which was written around 63 to 64 AD. Since Acts refers to Luke's gospel as a previous account, we know Luke must have been written before that.
So we've got a sort of before date for Luke, thanks to Acts.
Right.
But how much earlier could it have been?
Some scholars think Luke was written after 70 AD because it mentions the destruction of Jerusalem. But again, that could be explained by prophecy, right? If Jesus could predict the future, maybe Luke wrote it down before it happened.
Right. Well, if Jesus could predict the future, then his followers could write about it before it happened, right? So if we factor in the possibility of prophecy, Luke could have been written before 70 AD, potentially even in the late 50s. Especially if he had time to research and write during Paul's imprisonment in Caesarea? Wait, so is Luke's gospel actually older than Mark's?
Well, Dr. Newman suggests that maybe both gospels were written around the same time, but they circulated in different parts of the early church at different speeds. Mark might have reached the West first, while Luke gained popularity in the East initially. So think of it like this. Some scholars believe Mark was the first draft, and Matthew and Luke added their edits, while others think Matthew was the original, and everyone else riffed off of him.
So it's not necessarily about which one was written first, but which one reached certain audiences first.
That's a great way to put it. And it adds another layer of complexity and nuance to our understanding of how these Gospels came to be the foundational texts of Christianity.
Okay. I think we've done some serious detective work today. We've explored the evidence supporting the traditional authorship of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and we've delved into the various theories surrounding the dating of these Gospels.
It's been quite a journey, and sometimes the most satisfying answers are the ones that raise even more intriguing questions.
Now, here's something to ponder. If Matthew, Mark, and Luke were the authors of these Gospels, why did they become the accepted authors when other figures, like Peter, might have been more well-known in the early church?
That's a great question to consider. Why these authors and why these particular accounts?
Okay, so now that we have a better sense of who wrote these Gospels and when, let's tackle another big question. What makes each one so unique? We've been using the term synoptic Gospels. What does that even mean?
Synoptic comes from Greek words meaning together and view. So the synoptic Gospels share a similar view of the life and teachings of Jesus.
Ah, so they're like different camera angles on the same scene.
Exactly. Matthew, Mark, and Luke share a lot of the same stories, often in a very similar order and sometimes even using the same wording. They are like three threads woven together to create a richer, more textured tapestry of Jesus' life.
But they're not identical, right? They each have their own unique flavor. What are some of the things that set them apart?
Each gospel has its own emphasis, its own theological perspective, and its own target audience.
Like personalized versions of the same story. So tell me more. What are some of those unique characteristics that make each synoptic gospel stand out? Okay, so we've got these three gospels, each with a unique flavor. What are some of the things that set them apart? Let's start with Matthew.
Well, Matthew is very structured and organized, almost like a well-crafted sermon. It really emphasizes Jesus as the fulfillment of Jewish prophecy, the true king of the Jews.
That makes sense, considering tradition says he was writing for a Jewish audience.
Exactly. Matthew frequently connects Jesus' actions and teachings back to the Old Testament. He's showing how Jesus fulfills the hopes and expectations of Israel. He even includes a detailed genealogy tracing Jesus' lineage back to Abraham.
So Matthew is all about showing how Jesus is the long-awaited Messiah, the one promised in the Hebrew Scriptures. What about Mark? What's his special angle?
Mark's gospel is known for its fast-paced, action-packed style. It's less like a sermon and more like a highlight reel of Jesus' ministry, full of vivid details and dramatic scenes. It emphasizes Jesus' authority and power, portraying him as a miracle worker and a divine conqueror.
Now that you mention it, Mark's gospel does feel a bit different. You can really sense that eyewitness feel we talked about earlier.
Exactly. And Dr. Newman also points out how Mark's outline of Jesus' ministry is very similar to Peter's speech in the book of Acts. It's like they're riffing off the same source material.
Okay, so Matthew's the structured sermon. Mark is the action-packed blockbuster. What about Luke? How does the physician-turned-gospel writer approach the story?
Luke's gospel is often described as the most literary and sophisticated of the synoptics. It's beautifully written with rich imagery, and there's a deep concern for the marginalized and outcast. It emphasizes Jesus' compassion and mercy, portraying him as a savior for all people.
So Luke's gospel is like a beautifully written novel full of heart and hope.
That's a great way to put it. And remember, Luke was a Gentile Christian, so his gospel reflects a broader, more inclusive perspective, emphasizing Jesus' universal appeal. He includes stories that are unique to his gospel, like the parable of the Good Samaritan, which beautifully illustrates Jesus' message of love and compassion for all.
It's amazing how each gospel writer brings their own unique perspective and personality to the story.
It really is, and that's why it's so valuable to study all three synoptic gospels together. They complement and enrich each other, providing a multifaceted portrait of Jesus that's both inspiring and challenging.
Okay, I think we've done a pretty good job of unpacking the basics of the synoptic gospels. We've explored their authorship, their dating, and even their unique characteristics. But there's still one big question looming on the horizon. What about that synoptic problem you mentioned earlier?
Yes, the synoptic problem. That's where we really start to see how these gospels relate to each other.
Okay, I'm ready. Break it down for me. What exactly is the synoptic problem?
Well, simply put, it's this puzzle. Why do Matthew, Mark, and Luke share so much material, yet they also have their own unique passages and variations? They share stories, teachings, and even the same wording in some places. But then they'll also have entire sections that are totally different. It's like trying to figure out if they were all working from the same blueprint, or if they were copying from each other, or maybe even relying on other sources that we don't have anymore.
It's like realizing that everyone in your study group is using the same Spark Notes.
That's a great analogy. And just like with your study group, there are a few different theories about how the Synoptic Gospels came together.
Okay, let's hear them. What are some of these theories?
One of the most popular is the two-source hypothesis. Think of it this way. Imagine Mark wrote his gospel first. Then along comes Matthew, and he's like, hey, Mark's gospel is pretty good. I'm going to use some of that. And Luke does the same thing.
So Mark is like the original, and Matthew and Luke are remixes.
Exactly. But here's the catch. Matthew and Luke also share stuff that isn't in Mark. So this theory says they both had another source that we don't have anymore. Scholars call it Q, which stands for Quelle, the German word for source. This Q source would have been like a collection of Jesus' sayings.
So Mark is the bass track, and Q is like this bonus remix album with all the best one-liners from Jesus. And Matthew and Luke use both to make their own versions.
That's a great way to think about it. This theory does a good job of explaining a lot of what we see in the gospel.
Well, if there's a problem, right? We don't actually have this Q source.
Right. Q is still a hypothetical source. We haven't found any physical copies of it.
So what are some of the other theories?
Well, there's the Griesbach hypothesis. This one flips the script and says that Matthew wrote his gospel first, then Luke used Matthew's gospel to write his, and then Mark came along and basically created like a greatest hits version using both Matthew and Luke.
So each theory has its own way of explaining how the gospels fit together. It's like a giant puzzle.
Exactly. And the truth is, there's no single theory that perfectly solves the synoptic problem.
So what's the takeaway for us? What should we make of all this? Does it even matter which theory is correct?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that the synoptic problem doesn't diminish the value of the Gospels. It simply reminds us that they were composed in a complex historical and literary context. And as Dr. Newman points out, having multiple perspectives actually enriches our understanding of Jesus.
That's a great point. It's like having different camera angles on the same scene.
Exactly. And it's a reminder that the Bible is a living, breathing text filled with layers of meaning waiting to be explored and discovered.
So even though we may not have all the answers, we can still appreciate the unique contributions of each gospel and the way they work together to tell the story of Jesus.
Absolutely. And that's what makes this whole exploration so rewarding. We're engaging with these texts in a meaningful way and allowing them to shape our understanding of faith and history.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today. We've explored authorship, dating characteristics, and now we've even tackled the infamous synoptic problem. But I feel like we're just getting started. What else can you tell me about these fascinating texts? So we've been on this incredible journey exploring the Synoptic Gospels. We talked about authorship. We delved into dating. We even unpacked their unique characteristics. And we just finished tackling that synoptic problem, which was a real mind bender.
It's like a giant jigsaw puzzle, you know, figuring out how these three Gospels fit together.
Exactly. But, you know, I feel like we're just getting started. What else can you tell me about these fascinating texts?
Well, what's fascinating is that these Gospels aren't just historical accounts. They're also theological documents. They offer different perspectives on who Jesus was, what he did, and what it all means for us.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about that.
For example, Matthew presents Jesus as the fulfillment of Jewish prophecy, the King of the Jews. He's constantly drawing connections back to the Old Testament, showing how Jesus is the culmination of Israel's story.
That makes sense, considering his audience. Matthew was writing for a Jewish community trying to make sense of who Jesus was within their own tradition.
Exactly. And then you have Mark, who presents Jesus as a powerful miracle worker, a divine conqueror. His gospel is all about action and immediacy, emphasizing Jesus' authority and the urgency of his message.
It's like Mark is saying, look, Jesus was the real deal. He healed the sick. He cast out demons. He even calmed the storm. You can't deny his power.
Exactly. And then we have Luke, who highlights Jesus' compassion and mercy, especially for the marginalized and outcast. His gospel has this beautiful, almost lyrical quality to it, and it emphasizes Jesus' universal appeal, his message of hope for all people.
So it's like Luke is saying, hey, no matter who you are, no matter where you come from, Jesus cares about you. He came to offer forgiveness, healing, and a place at the table for everyone.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And you see, by exploring these different perspectives, these different facets of Jesus' personality and ministry, we gain a much richer understanding of who he was and what his message truly means.
It's like each gospel is adding another brushstroke to this incredible portrait of Jesus. And the more we look at it, the more depth and complexity we see.
Precisely. And that's what makes studying the Synoptic Gospels so rewarding. They invite us to keep looking, keep exploring, keep discovering new layers of meaning and insight.
Okay, so we've talked about authorship, dating, the synoptic problem, and now we've even touched on the theological perspectives of each gospel. What else should we keep in mind as we read and study these texts?
I think it's important to remember that these gospels were written in a specific historical and cultural context. The authors weren't writing objective, detached histories. They were writing to specific communities, addressing their concerns, and offering them a way to understand Jesus within their own world.
So we need to consider who they were writing to and why.
Exactly. For example, Matthew is writing to a Jewish community struggling to reconcile their faith with the claims of this new movement following Jesus. Mark was writing to a community facing persecution and hardship, offering them a message of hope and courage. And Luke was writing to a mixed community of Jews and Gentiles, emphasizing Jesus' universal appeal and the inclusiveness of his message.
So by understanding the context, we can better understand the message, right?
Exactly. And we can also appreciate how the Gospels speak to our own context, our own challenges, and our own search for meaning and purpose.
That's powerful. It's like these ancient texts are still alive and relevant today, offering us guidance and inspiration as we navigate our own journeys.
They truly are. And that's why it's so important to keep studying them, keep engaging with them, and keep allowing them to shape our lives.
Well, I think we've done a pretty amazing job of unpacking the Synoptic Gospels today. I feel like I have a much deeper understanding of these texts and what makes them so special.
Me too. And I hope our listeners feel the same way.
You know, what's really amazing is that these Gospels, written so long ago, still have so much to teach us today. They challenge us to think differently, to live differently, and to love differently.
They invite us to encounter Jesus in a new and profound way.
And that's the real beauty of the Synoptic Gospels. They're not just stories from the past. They're stories for all time, offering us timeless truths about faith, hope, and love.
And they invite us to keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep seeking that deeper understanding of ourselves and the world around us.
So until our next deep dive, keep those minds curious, those hearts open, and those knowledge-seeking spirits alive.